Before we dive into today's episode, a quick but important note. The information shared in this podcast is for general educational and entertainment purposes only. We love sharing our insights, but please remember, this content does not constitute medical, health, or professional advice. Everybody and every situation is unique. You should always consult with a qualified medical specialist or healthcare professional before starting any new program, making lifestyle changes, or acting on any information you hear today. Your health is your responsibility, so let's keep it safe.
Welcome back to Living the Good Life, the podcast where we explore the world at a pace that honors your body, your energy, and your curiosity. We're glad you're here. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Robert. You know, there's a phrase I hear all the time. It's usually on like a coffee mug or a t-shirt. It's about the journey, not the destination.
Yeah, right. That's for people who've never traveled. It's actually what you tell yourself when everything's going wrong on your trip.
Exactly. It's our coping mechanism when we're stuck in traffic or, you know, the flight's delayed again. But for a really significant part of the population, that journey part isn't just a poetic idea. It's not a minor inconvenience.
Exactly. It's a logistical minefield. I guess that's a perfect way to put it. I mean, travel's chaotic for anybody.
You're out of your routine. You're in a strange bed. The food's different.
The time zones are wrong. But if you take the baseline level of chaos and then you add a disability or special needs into the mix, the complexity doesn't just double.
It compounds. It really, really does. And that's exactly what we are unpacking today.
We're looking at that baseline travel stress through a much more intense, high-stakes lens.
Because let's be honest, there's so much generic travel advice out there. Pack light, bring snacks.
Oh, yeah. Arrive early. Yep.
But we're giving our perspective as caregivers of an adult special needs son. It feels different because of the perspective. And in this area, credibility is crucial.
And we're not just talking from reading a textbook or books. We live this.
Yes, every single day.
Yep, it is a lived experience in our case. We understand the logistics of being caregivers, the people managing the tickets, the bags, the medication, the schedules, the emotional regulation of somebody else.
That combination, living it and managing it, it just cuts through all the fluff. It really does. So our mission today is to get into those weeds.
We're moving way, way past the bring the neck pillow advice. We are going to look at some granular logistics, some honestly uncomfortable self-assessments, and something we call the Plan Z.
We'll definitely get to that. But I think the place we have to start is with the biggest misconception, the elephant in the room.
Which one is that? The idea that disabled travelers, a single category of person, a monolithic demographic?
Exactly. That's the phrase we like to think, oh, the hotel website says it's ADA compliant, so we're good, right?
Right. But travelers with disabilities are not a monolithic demographic. What works for someone with a mobility issue could be completely irrelevant for someone with, say, a sensory processing disorder.
Or even detrimental. A hotel room might have a wide door for a wheelchair, which is great, but if the walls are paper thin and the air conditioner hums all night, it's a nightmare for someone with autism who has that auditory sensitivity.
So one size definitely does not fit all. It's not even close. So if that industry label of accessible isn't enough, and it's often pretty clear that it isn't, the responsibility falls on us, the travelers, and their companions to do a really rigorous needs assessment.
And this is where we suggest a special set of questions. And these are not your standard travel questions like, Is there a pool? These are questions about the actual mechanics of existing.
Let's walk through a few of these, because this is where the real insight is. It feels like the focus is shifting from where are we going to how do we function. That's the real shift.
So take time management, for an example. Most of us think, flight's at 2, we need to be at the gate by 1, so we'll leave the house at 11. Simple math.
Oh, definitely standard math. How long does it actually take to load and unload the special equipment? Time it with a stopwatch.
That's a great point, because you can't just throw your bag in the trunk and hop in the back of the shuttle bus.
If you got a wheelchair, a walker, heavy sensory gear, you're looking at a physical transition that could take 15, 20, or more minutes each time. You might have to disassemble a scooter. You might have to secure someone in a special seat.
Now do that 4 times a day. Hotel to car, car to museum, museum back to the car, car to the restaurant. You've just lost over an hour just in transitions.
And if your schedule doesn't account for that hour, you'll be late. And for a lot of travelers with special needs, being rushed isn't just annoying.
It creates stress that triggers anxiety, which can lead to behavioral dysregulation. It's a domino effect that starts before you even had breakfast. So you're behind schedule before the day has even really begun.
Right. And if you haven't planned for that extra time and done that math, another question to bring up is one that seems mundane, but it's really critical. It's about clothing and the luggage equation.
Do extra changes of clothing fit in the luggage? Just think about the implications there. Why would you need extra clothes? Well, maybe you're with someone who has incontinence issues.
And they could be a messy eater because of motor control challenges. Or they might be like me, who's just a messy eater these days. Or they have sensory issues and need to change fabrics if they get a little wet or too hot. So you're not packing just one outfit per day, you're packing 3.
And your clothing volume just doubled or tripled. So that whole carry-on only travel hack that every blogger talks about, out the window.
Yeah, it's probably gone. You're checking bags, which means extra fees for sure.
But more importantly, it means extra time at the baggage carousel. It means more physical stuff to manage while you're also trying to manage a person. You may also need to consider the sensory environment.
And this is something huge for neurodivergent travelers, isn't it? It is massive. Do particular noises bother the traveler? Imagine a big bustling hotel lobby, marble floors, echoing voices, clinking glasses.
To a typical traveler, this feels kind of fancy. But to someone else, to someone on the autism spectrum, that could be a sonic nightmare, a total assault.
Exactly. It could trigger meltdown right at check-in, and we've dealt with things like that. So you need to know ahead of time. Does the hotel have a quiet area? Is there room far away from the elevators? And think about routines.
We all get hungry. I know I do. But we're talking about something more rigid, especially if someone gets hangry.
Yeah, it's much more. It's not just the mood. It could be a medical necessity. So you need to know that ahead of time. It's much more. It's not just a mood. It's medical necessity. How strictly does the eating schedule need to be followed? Is it tied to medication? If a medicine has to be taken with food at an exact time, like say 8 a.m., you can't be stuck in line for the breakfast buffet.
You need food on hand, and there's some ADLs, activities of daily living.
Toileting, bathing, dressing, the absolute basics, which for some of us, it's a simple routine. We have it all down, but maybe your special traveler needs some kind of assistance with these. Because if they do, you aren't just booking a hotel room.
You're setting up a temporary care facility inside a strange box. Completely reframes the whole planning phase. You're not just looking at TripAdvisor for the best view.
You're also looking at the floor plan. You have to solve the functional equation first. Only then can you even think about the recreational part of your trip.
Okay, so that's assessing the traveler. But there's another person in this equation. The companion.
Yes, the caregiver. And this, to me, is important because it's so rarely discussed. It's kind of a caregiver reality check.
It can feel like a tough love moment. It is. It's brutally honest self-reflection.
And we all want to be the hero, right? We want to say, of course, I can take my mom to Europe, or I can handle my son's equipment all by myself. But do you actually have the physical strength to do that? And it is really a safety issue. It's not just about being tired or weak.
It's an absolute safety issue. Can you push a manual wheelchair up a steep cobblestone hill? Can you physically lift a grown adult out of a bathtub if there isn't a lift? Can you do it in a tiny airplane bathroom, a bathroom that's small enough for one person, let alone two?
And if the answer to, can I lift them, is maybe or I think so, that really means the answer is no. The answer has to be no.
Because if I throw out my back, transferring someone from a car to a wheelchair in a foreign country, or God forbid, I drop them, the trip isn't just ruined, it's a medical emergency for two people.
Wow, that would be a real disaster, and I think something people don't always consider. So with something like that, you suddenly have two patients and no caregivers. That's the sober reality. It's not about your willingness to help.
It's about your capacity, and extends to the social group too, and how it impacts the rest of the travel party.
This is a huge friction point. Say you have a mixed group of six.
Four of them want to sprint from museum to museum. Two of them need slow, deliberate transitions. That's a recipe for resentment.
We've seen that happen before. Unless you have this conversation beforehand, and it has to be honest, are there other people in the group who actively understand what it's all about? Are they willing to move at the pace of the slowest member? If not, you have to split up or you need to change the plan.
You can't just hope it'll work itself out on the road. So we've assessed the traveler, we've assessed the caregiver.
We'll be right back. So now let's talk about the gear. We have a strategy here that is fairly non-negotiable. It's doing a shakedown trip or a test run.
It sounds so obvious. Try your stuff out. This means something very specific.
We're talking about a full dress rehearsal. And we've done this on bicycle tours that we've led and can tell, I got almost horror stories about people who didn't try out their gear for a month-long bicycle tour and on the first day had mechanical problems. So there's a similarity here. You really do need to do a shakedown or full rehearsal and time it. Don't just look at that new portable lift that's in the box and think, wow, that looks
you need to unpack
really good.
It. Set it up. Put the person in it.
Right. You don't want to find out on your trip that it takes forever to set up or break down. And this
is so
important.
Use a stopwatch while you do it. Why the stopwatch? This feels so intense because your perception of time is not reality. You might think it just takes 5 minutes to disassemble the scooter for the taxi, but in reality, with the latches and the weight, it might take 20 minutes. It's totally different. If it takes 20 minutes in your calm living room, imagine doing that at the curb at JFK with cars honking, rain falling, and a taxi driver yelling at you. If you know the real time, you build in a buffer.
Right. And these days, it's especially so important to have extra time. You can manage expectations knowing that knowledge of the time to get ready should lower your stress. Then there's other things to think about, like electronics, chargers, adapters, all of which are really critical now, especially if you have a motorized wheelchair. A motorized wheelchair battery, that's your legs that
move you around. A communication tablet for a nonverbal child. That's their voice. So just knowing it works at home isn't enough. You need to know the recharge time.
Right. If a battery takes 8 hours to fully charge and you have a 6-hour layover at the airport, you are going to be stranded or without adequate charge. You have to know the math. You have to know if your adapters work with the voltage in another country so you don't blow a fuse or blow out your equipment on the first night and lose your mobility.
The test run basically reveals all the invisible constraints on your trip. You build your schedule around what the equipment can do, not what you hope it can do.
Okay, let's talk about where you're staying. The accommodation. We've stayed at many different types of accommodation and found some wonderful B&Bs so that we could cook, store food, and spread out, and most importantly, have separate bathrooms.
It goes right back to that monolith problem. Accessibility is a legal term, not a functional guarantee.
Actually, the inventory for what we're looking for is pretty slim. And it's really a great case study. For example, we had free time, we hadn't seen our son. So in the off season, I want to say end of October, in the early fall, we decided to pick up our son and drive to Lake Placid. Little did we know that there was a hockey tournament in town. First, it was difficult to find a connecting room or a suite with 2 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms.
Logically, the town should have been empty. We have a very specific list of must-haves for our room.
And I kind of mentioned our list, 2 bedrooms, 2 baths. A living area, and a mini kitchen. Now, you might hear that and think, wow, that's a luxury suite, but it accommodates our needs and keeps
everybody
happy.
We need the 2 bathrooms. That's the time management and privacy for those ADLs, those activities of daily living.
Right. It could take 45 minutes to help somebody to shower. You can't have the rest of the family waiting for the 1 bathroom. Perhaps the person you travel with makes a mess, so then you have to clean it. There's a bottleneck, and that throws off the whole day. Then there's the kitchen.
Medication schedules. You need a fridge and a workspace. It's not luxury, it's infrastructure.
So for us, this specific setup works best, but it seems more difficult to find. We're not sure why hotels don't think more about family suites, but it seems that they don't. And thought Lake Placid would be easy because it's off season. What happens? There's a local
the variable you can
tournament.
Never predict, and suddenly the town isn't empty, it's packed.
And the hotels are full. And because of our needs that were so specific, we're competing for a specific room, and the inventory is actually non-existent. In fact, that time, we had to each get our own room that did not connect. So that was interesting,
we almost had
but
to cancel.
It did work out.
The lesson isn't to check the hockey schedules, and who would have even guessed that that would have been a problem?
It's not just that with canceling. Our son gets very excited when we're coming to visit. That would upset him even more. Changes aren't good for him. But when you have special needs, you're fishing in a much, much smaller pond. And a standard hotel room just doesn't always work. You need space, privacy, and facilities.
So the rule has to be extreme advance notice. You have to secure the infrastructure of the trip before you even commit to the trip. You cannot rely on winging it.
Yeah, kind of spontaneity is a luxury that you might have to trade for safety. This brings us to the psychological side of it all. You've done the assessment. You've timed the gear. You booked the suite 6 months out.
And yet things will still go wrong because it's travel.
And this is where you need to shift in the plan Z mindset. Most people have plan A, maybe a plan B, but we have a plan Z, and it just acknowledges that we might burn through the entire alphabet before lunchtime. In fact, we may have to name our plans like they name hurricanes or start with the Greek
chaos
alphabet.
Chaos is the baseline. The core philosophy, it assumes chaos is the baseline. The core philosophy here is about remaining realistic.
Right, and there's a very direct relationship between fatigue and travel failure. We usually just think of fatigue as being
sleepy. For a traveler
sleepy.
With special needs, fatigue is often the direct precursor to a behavioral collapse. It's physical exhaustion, sensory overload, cognitive fatigue. It all just stacks up.
And when the brain gets that tired, the coping mechanisms shut down. So the strategy isn't just
the strategy
push
is to
through
slow
it.
Down and observe. You have to be hyper alert to the smallest behavioral clues, the fidgeting, the silence, a change in tone.
And when you see those signs, you stop. You react
and
with
another plan. And this
is
the hardest
plan.
Part for the caregiver. You have to be willing to abandon the itinerary. Losing money is a real possibility.
For example, we paid $50 for these tickets. Now we're going to do anything to use them and get inside. That's the typical instinct.
Think about it. If you push through, you're prioritizing the ticket over the person, and you pay for it later with a meltdown that might ruin the next 2 days.
This is a different metric for success. Take note of what elicits smiles. It's so simple, right? It's such
a
human
metric. But
take
it a step further. If you find something that makes your companion smile, you should consider just repeating it. That goes against every travel instinct we have.
That's so true, and we are not saying that has been easy for us or will necessarily be easy for you. We still miss some things when we're traveling. In general, we're all obsessed about the novelty of a place. You have a bucket list. We're kind of novelty junkies.
We think we did the park yesterday, so today we have to do the museum. However, for many travelers with special needs, familiarity is comfort. If sitting by a fountain eating ice cream brought genuine joy yesterday, why not just do it again today?
And who doesn't like to sit down and eat ice cream? You're prioritizing the outcome, the joy of spending time with the special needs person over the novelty of the activity. If the goal of the vacation is happiness and the fountain creates happiness, then the fountain is the most productive thing you can do, even if you go there 3 days in a row.
That requires a massive ego check for the planner. You have to let go of your bucket list. You have to accept that your job is to facilitate joy, not to complete a checklist.
And when the itinerary fails, and it will, as hard as it may be, you need to step back, think about your history, what soothing techniques worked in the past. Bring a toolkit to the travel crisis.
And you remember the real purpose. The purpose is just enjoying time together, not executing a perfect schedule.
For the general traveler, ignoring this advice leads to a bad mood, a frantic day. For the traveler with special needs, ignoring this advice can lead to a completely failed trip or even a safety crisis. The stakes are much higher
now. It's survival versus preference. Patience is a virtue. Flexibility is an asset.
Okay, so let's have a little review and recap the pillars. And feel free to try these for yourself, or maybe you have other techniques you use. So for the pillars, if you're planning a trip like this, where do you start? Phase one is the assessment.
Break the monolith. Ask those granular questions. Not just is it accessible, but how long does the transfer take? What are the sensory triggers? Phase two.
That's the logistics and the reality check. We have to rent a special type of car, and if you have equipment, you have to see if there's something available that can hold your equipment easily. So you need to look at the logistics, assess yourself, and assess those you'll be traveling with.
Time your equipment with a stopwatch and book that specific accommodation way, way in advance.
And finally, and I'll say this is the third phase, change your mindset. Embrace Plan Z or whichever plan works. Monitor for fatigue like a hawk.
And be willing to scrap the whole itinerary the moment the smiles stop. It's a completely different way to look at travel. It's less about the consumption of experiences.
And more about curation of comfort and calmness.
It really challenges the whole definition of a successful trip. It really does. You know, we spend so much time maximizing our vacations, optimizing everything.
If we all stripped away our rigid itineraries, our bucket lists, and the frantic need to see everything. I'm one who's very guilty about that. And we only chase moments that elicit it. Genuine smiles, whether it's just sitting on a park bench for 3 hours or eating the same meal every day. How drastically would our definition of a successful vacation change? It's a question worth asking. No matter who you're traveling with.
Safe travels, everyone. Travel well and keep on living the good life.